This is the Radical Geek signing off. But coming up next is Nutty Bites, with your geek queen, Nutty Nuchas, and her upside-down and flying co-host, Tech. So sit back, enjoy, and don't touch that dial on your podcatcher.
Hello, Mixed Nutcases. This is Nuchas, and I've got an episode of Nutty Bites for you today. Today, we're going to be doing the topic book or movie, where we're going to be talking about movie adaptations of books and so forth. And this was suggested by my regular co-host.
Hi, I'm Tech.
And with us today, we have a couple of people, and we may have more people joining us as we go through the cast. But first off, we have with us...
Hi, I'm Jason, and you're probably sick of me already.
Yes, we are.
And...
Hi, it's Jen.
We're not sick of you. And somebody else at their place.
Hi, I'm Hugh.
Yay, it's Hugh.
Yay.
Materialize out of the great north. Well, the less north than you, but yes, the more north than them. So north, I guess
the relative north.
We call that north-ish.
The ball.
Buffalo counts as north. I mean, it may not be Canada, but it might as well be.
I mean, if we translated that into the world of Game of Thrones, would that be the wall?
Yes. Yes. He would be Molestown. Buffalo is Molestown.
The wall, except that, like, they decided that the wall was old and maybe they should build a second wall, and then they debated it for like 20 years and then they didn't do anything.
Yeah, that sounds about right. So thank you for joining us, guys. We are going to be talking book or movie. Now, disclaimer, for me, this is my personal opinion. A lot of people get bent out of shape over movie adaptations of books. If you want to read the book, read the book. The movie's going to be a different experience. But today we're going to talk about times that the book is definitely better, or times that the movie is actually better than the book. Tech, do you want to start us off?
Sure. I want to start off by talking about that this is the problem when you interpret somebody else's work, and that it's not just a problem of book to movie or movie to book, that even continuing a book series after an author passes away, or continuing a movie series when the fans want to see more, that the intention of the content creator is important, and that what needs to translate is a love of the original source material. If your love of the original source material is blinded by, oh gee, I don't know, a love of absolute profit, so you decide to shoehorn everything that was great about your first three Star Wars movie and jam them all into one movie, and then take everything that was good of those movies out, and you're left with the original, with, you know, episode 1, 2, and 3, which was just god awful. But I guess if I'm gonna start talking about a one that people know, the book was amazing, the movie less so, was Starship Troopers. So the book came out in the 50s by Robert Heinlein. It's one of my favorite sci-fi books. It was written more as a treatise on how would a military of the future be trained. And there's a lot of politics in the book, a lot of exposition. The story is sort of secondary to the training concepts and the tactical data that goes into it. And it's a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful book if you want to know what someone, an amazing, far-thinking genius like Heinlein, thinks about what a military of the future would be like. The movie is pure popcorn schlock. It is drivel.
It's entertaining. But it's a different concept.
Absolutely, it's entertaining, and I enjoy the movie. I mean, any movie that has a shower scene with Denise Richards topless in it has got my attention.
Indeed,
but also, I think they've kind of messed up that movie when they made it a satire of fascism.
Absolutely, because none of that exists in the book. There is a lot about fascism and a lot about, you know, right wing politics, but it didn't have, you know, the visuals really take something away when they start throwing in, you know, Doogie Howser in his like really an SS uniform, but it's not an SS uniform, and all do you want to know more? And all of that weird stuff that they throw in as like visual sight gags. Plus, they talked nothing about their training, nothing about the skills that they have, the nothing about him being a cook, nothing about the power armor, nothing about the jumping. Yeah. There's other alien races called the Skinnies that end up being their allies against the bugs. There's no Skinnies in the movie.
Yep.
We don't get any of the mechs or power armor until the third movie, by the way. Did you know
there's multiple movies?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We're just talking the first one.
sci-fi.
With that though, there was a CG kids cartoon series of Starship Troopers. I think it did a season or two. It was really, really good. It had the power armor in it. It had the Skinnies in it. It was geared towards a younger audience, like young adults. So they did tone a lot of the violence down, and of course there has to be a kid character in it who the kids can identify with, and in this case he's a non-combatant combat photographer attached to the Marines, so that kids don't feel bad about kids killing things. But it wasn't bad. It was definitely much, much closer to the source material than the Starship Troopers, the movie, which I enjoyed.
Yeah,
they could have called it anything else. And
it would have been a good movie.
It would have been just as good because it had nothing to do with the source material.
There was one thing that I appreciated, and I think Heinlein might have written it if he was writing it today, and that was the whole, when they turn. So in the movie, one of the characters is gender flipped, and his best friend Dizzy is a woman. And
what a woman. It's Dina Meyer.
It's Dina Meyer. She's amazing. So much hotter than Denise Richards. Sorry. But yeah.
Ooh, that'll start a fight.
I don't care. Fight me. And everyone's showering in the same room, and nobody cares. It's not sexual. It's not a thing. It's just troops are troops and gender is irrelevant. And they can do sexy time later.
That was pretty much the only part of the forward thinking that Heinlein had that transversed into the movie.
That's what I'm trying to say. Yeah, that was really the only thing.
The only problem I have with that scene, there wasn't enough grab ass. Like they should have been popping towels and doing stupid stuff.
Okay, but so that I really dug. But again, I kind of liked the whole, okay, we're going to make this movie and we're going to show how propaganda does not, and news agencies, their spin does not reflect truth. But again, you could have done that with any other story. You didn't have to call it Starship Troopers. I saw the movie first and I said, wow, this is really cool. And then I read the book and I said, oh my God, that's amazing. And this is before Tech and I started dating. This is before I learned more about military culture. This was just me as a New York civvy who knows nothing. I dug it. I really dug it. So highly recommended. Going along with that, I'm gonna bring up something. Again, it's a movie I saw first, and then I read the book and went, oh my God. But the book and the movie are even more different from each other. They're so vastly different. I can't even imagine they have the same title. And that's Practical Magic. And Practical Magic, the book, is so amazing. And it takes place on Long Island, by the way, not even Connecticut. Like, there's a blip in Connecticut, and that's it. But Long Island is important.
So I'm blanking. I don't know either.
Okay, so Practical Magic is, it was Sandra Bullock and Nicole Kidman, and they're in this small town in Connecticut, and everybody whispers about how they're witches, and then they start doing magic, and oh no, it's true.
Oh my gosh. Like, by the way, Nettie, I think have you heard of Practical Magic, you?
I've heard of the movie. I didn't know it was a book.
Yeah. So you're going 4 for 4 because
I am the only person who has read this or watched the movie.
That's okay. I've got a couple other ones on my list. And I know one for sure. I think I'm the only one that's done both. So
that's okay.
I think I'll stump you with another one here. But let's move on. Practical Magic. Enlighten us, Nutty.
So Practical Magic, the movie, it's like very much magic, supernatural kind of a thing. It's fun. It's campy. I mean, you get a lot of Nicole Kidman dancing around in tiny, tiny shorts. Yay. And everybody loves that. And Tech is saying yay from the other room. It's a lot of fun. But then when you read the Alice Hoffman book, it's more subtle. and subdued. It's the idea of, like, you know, magic is there, but it's everyday magic. It's not, you know, sparks flying, people jumping off the roof with an umbrella and landing and not dying and all this other stuff. It's not like actual curses. It's more of a drama and a heartfelt thing. I highly recommend Alice Hoffman, by the way. She's a fantastic writer. And the fact that she writes most of her books from my hometown is kind of cool. But reading that book, I was like, that they have nothing to do with each other. So I highly recommend the book. If you had a passing glance at it in the 90s and said, hey, that's kind of fun, read the book.
They won't like you saying this, but I'm looking at you, Batman versus Superman. Because your name in book form, it's called The Dark Knight Returns.
And it's great.
Your movie is trash. Your comic is amazing. We're looking at you, female Robin. No, seriously,
the animated version of the book.
Yeah, the animated version was actually really good too. But the live action, I guess, mashup of that with a Justice League origin story in the live action was terrible. Like because they missed a lot of, without that, with the comic, you missed a lot of the subtleties that were involved with the fact that Bruce Wayne was basically going mad with old age because he couldn't be Batman.
That's the Frank Miller book, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's amazing.
Yeah, and there was so much great, like, atmosphere created.
Just before Frank Miller went mad.
Yes. there was so much atmosphere from, like, how you get to see how all these characters you had known to love in their younger forms had gotten older, gotten slower, weren't as quick on their feet. And you lose all that in the movie. It becomes this giant kind of blah explosion fest with a meandering plot that has a terrible climax. And the only good thing we got out of that movie was Wonder Woman. Whereas you don't get any Wonder Woman in the comic until the second book, The Dark Knight Strikes Again.
Oh, boy.
Or it strikes back or strikes again, something like that.
Yeah, Dark Knight Strikes Again.
Yeah, and that is when Frank Miller lost his mind. But, you know, you lose all those subtleties when it went to the big screen. And they tried to say that they weren't doing that comic, but all signs point that they were, because you have an older Bruce Wayne. Mm-hmm. You have a Bruce Wayne who has not been Batman for a while. You have him trying to get back into the swing of things. And then you also have Superman kind of coming to stop him from being Batman, which is a big thing in the book. You even have the power suit, which they basically copied hook, line, and sinker out of the comic. So that adaptation was terrible.
Agreed. DC sucks at doing live adaptations.
They
really do.
Yeah, their
animated is spot on, and Marvel sucks at the animated.
I think that they're sort of losing their touch on the animated, because I have some thoughts about Gotham by Gaslight. I have some thoughts about, like, I saw the trailer for Batman in Feudal Japan, which is like, do not take your ideas directly from Tumblr, please.
You know what, though? But what a world that it is. So we have another guest with us. We have Jay Lengens, the man of a thousand voices. Yes?
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you.
Hi, Jay.
Hey, Jay.
I know that guy.
Hey, how you doing?
Tech, you have your hand raised.
Mr. Kata. I do have my hand raised, because we were just finishing up on the idea that DC sucks at live adaptations of great comic books. So I have one just because I want to hear the noise that Jay makes when I so both Jays, but specifically Jason Banks, I want to hear him make noise when I say this. So you were saying, Hugh, that they're starting to lose their touch. I will counterpoint that they've never had it. I'm looking at you, Steel, starring Shaquille O'Neal.
Oh.
Was that an animated?
No, that was live action. That was based after the death of Superman. There were a bunch of different Supermen that stood up. One of them, John Henry Irons, became
Shaq?
They did, and it's awful.
Oh, that was my favorite replacement Superman.
It makes Shazam look great. This is bad.
Okay, so.
Okay.
All right, so first off, I will not blame Shaq for that travesty. He is not an actor. He is a 7'3" center, greatest big man in sports basketball history.
I saw the trailers before Black Panther. He's an actor again.
Yes, he is. Also, he is a huge Superman fan. He is a huge Steel fan. In fact, he had a custom designed Ford 6500 or something is what it was dubbed, because they
F650. He got the really the really really big truck to fit the really really big man. He even had Jesse James build him a custom oversized chopper, build Shaq sized, and it's got Superman logos all over it.
And we all get that.
Yeah, so it was a big thing for him.
Mm-hmm. Hey, let's not forget Ryan Reynolds signed on to Green Lantern without reading the script.
Like,
when you're a fan.
You know what? He's an actor with an agent who had access to said script. You know, they probably came up to Shaq and was like, hey, man, we know you love Superman. What we're going to do, Steel. You want to be in it? And he's like, obviously, yes.
Yeah.
Just but back up that dump truck of money to my house, please. Add it to the heap.
Yes.
Hey, I did Space Jam. Money. I could do Steel.
Yeah, I need that money so I can later be a sheriff in Florida.
Okay. Hugh, do you have a book or a movie you'd like to talk about?
This might be a little premature because you haven't gotten to it in your Ghibli rewatch. But
don't spoil me.
Okay. So this is going to be a minor spoiler.
Wait, so which one was it? Because I talked over you.
We're talking about Earthsea, which has been a movie three times and they all sucked.
I'm not gonna like this Ghibli movie.
Movie is marginally better than the sci-fi and network miniseries versions, but it like kind of like takes random stuff from the books and does its own story with it that doesn't make a ton of sense.
Nice.
Is that even on our list, Nutty?
Yeah. Earthsea's on our list.
Okay.
But the sci-fi Earthsea is like just trash. It's literal trash. Like, no one read the book. Like, they race flipped Ged. It's not good.
Wow. Okay.
They get a white guy. They made him a blonde guy.
Yeah, because Earthsea is in the South Pacific? No.
It's based on Polynesian culture.
Polynesian culture.
Oh, so, you know, much like Emma Stone can totally play a Polynesian woman.
What was that movie?
Aloha.
Oh, yes. Oh,
in the movie, she's in the book rather, I think she's half Polynesian, half Asian or something like that. And in the movie, she's played by Emma Stone. Emma Stone.
We could completely derail this entire conversation and just talk about whitewashing, destroying everything in Hollywood.
I believe we've done that.
I'm looking at you, Ghost in the Shell, but we're not going to go there.
If you'd like to listen to that episode, just go back to the archives and type in whitewashing.
I don't need to talk about Ghost in the Shell. We're going to take Ghost in the Shell as given at this point.
Yeah. Everybody knows Ghost in the Shell. I mean, although the animated... I'll give it that. That's quite good
because
as well.
It was done by the same guy.
Exactly.
That's why.
So I don't really think of it as an adaptation.
Movies are good, but they're trying to cram a lot of comic into a 90-minute movie, and there are parts where it goes off the rails because of that.
But I will say, Standalone Complex and Second Gig are probably some of the best anime you'll ever watch.
They're really good.
I have serious problems about the ways that Second Gig dives into the police state, but that's a different topic for
all right.
No, Jen is here, and so come on, Jen.
Oh,
do you have a thing you want to talk
Jen,
about?
Jen, what book is better than a movie, or vice versa? I don't know.
What is a better book than a movie, Jen?
There's a few of them that I have read the book before I have watched the movie. And, you know, I have issues. Harry Potter 4, Goblet of Fire.
Quit avoiding it, Jen.
I have issues.
Quit avoiding it, Jen.
So, does manga count?
No, why are you...
Full Metal Alchemist, I have issues.
Why are you avoiding it, Jen?
With the real life, not with the anime.
Jason seems to be trying to go for a point here, Jen.
I think he's got a point.
Feels of all the heartbreaking parts that are in the movie, and I decided I can't take it.
Just don't. Because it was almost more heartbreaking.
I can't see Hughes die again.
It was more heartbreaking in the real life than it was in the anime or the manga.
I can't deal with Alexandra again. No.
Obviously, Jason has some book and Jeff movie that Bridges. He has an issue with, too.
No, Jen, I would love to hear your thoughts on this.
The thing is, Jen, Jason's just been talking about how much you think The Giver is a better movie than it is a book.
Oh, it was. It was a great movie.
See how red she's getting right now.
That's because I'm hot, hence the fan.
Oh, gosh.
Jeff Bridges, he was my hero. He played it so well.
What was the best part?
I hated that.
Expletive deleted.
And edit.
Yay!
What?
For the record, this is the first time Jen has made me edit my podcast.
Sorry.
That's how much she hates the movie.
Actually, you can blame Jason for that.
And now we go to PG-13 because we said the F-bomb once.
No.
No, you have to say it twice to go
now, above. That's not my... It's 13 plus is basically my rating. It's not the MPIA. Hey, whatever.
If you want to know more about what we think about that, you can watch that episode. Just go to the archives.
Yeah, and just look up ratings.
There was another movie that I was thinking about earlier, and now that I'm actually here and talking about The Giver, I can't think of it.
Because you're just so angry about The Giver.
We'll go around and do another round because I got more to talk about. But
well, hang on, Jay's got Jay Vengeance. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Other Jay. What
other
are your
Jay.
Thoughts?
Yeah.
Give okay. us a book or a movie.
Okay, I think Starship Troopers is a better book than a movie.
That was
we did that one.
That was the number one thing I brought up.
Really?
I went on a tangent. Oh yeah.
Oh, I missed it. Damn.
Yes. Have you watched the animated series though?
Well, I watched an animated sequel, but I wouldn't have called it a series unless I was mistaken.
No, they did a TV series.
Okay.
Of Starship Troopers done for like a young adult audience, and it actually wasn't bad. It was much, much closer to the source material than that popcorn flick with Denise Richards and Dina Myers was. But Doogie Howser in an SS uniform that still... Yeah. Makes me laugh. But no, so they've actually got the power armor. They've actually got skinnies. They're actually fighting bugs. The one thing that was kind of cool.
Don't die on us.
Is they kept the same bug design as the live action movie.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good. Then it keeps the continuity, right?
Right. It, you know what? It was actually not a bad series.
Okay, I'm going to look that up. Mm. I'm going to trust you, Tech.
The animated movie wasn't that bad either. That CGI thing?
No, but the other sequels were pretty bad.
Yeah, they were.
Do we count movies, or sorry, books that have been made into, say, TV series? Because the next one on my list is Under the Dome, Stephen King.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one.
I thought initially when like they did the first couple episodes of the show that the show was better than the book. And then the show continued and just spiraled down.
I'll say this. So if you don't have a guy... in a root cellar with two dead corpses as his girlfriends.
Yeah.
They made him a main character.
They missed the whole point of his insanity and how sick he was.
Expletive deleted.
So Jay, why do you, what was the big failing? So the first couple of episodes were good, but where did it
go off the rails? Right.
I feel like I would say that in the book the mayor and his son are the true evil that they have to deal with under the dome, and they took all that away from the kid. They made him, like they said, a main character. They took away he's a
donkey.
I have to edit thanks to Jay.
Oh, sorry, he's a
donkey.
Hat? Does that work?
No, hole is not the first.
Hole was not the problem there.
Oh!
Oh my Lord. By the way, the doctor, Jen, in the background, Jen isolated herself in a corner because she literally almost dropped another F-bomb because of Under the Dome.
Oh, terribly sorry. I won't do it again.
Oh, boy.
But no, he's absolutely right. Like, they had Stephen King has been an author I've read since I was very young. My mother was a huge Stephen King fan, so I still read him today. And Under the Dome, I feel, was one of his best books. It is. I read this on my flight to Afghanistan, and it was just amazing. And there's so many things that happen in that book that either don't happen at all in the series or completely get changed. Again, the role of the mayor and his son were to show that, yes, these people are trapped under this dome by this unseen force, but instead of trying to work and work together and do something to help save everyone, they're still just small-minded and just so they're just so inrooted with their own power and corruption that they won't even try to save themselves. And in fact, you know, a little bit spoiler of the book, it's because of the mayor and the son that they nearly kill the entire town.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Like, so I got a quick question here, because in my experience, most of Stephen King's books or stories are better written than the adaptation, even the really good adaptations. And I've seen people say, like, Misery is much better as a movie. No, it's not. It's much better as a book.
I can say I have never read any Stephen King. And after we did that Nutty Bites Live where we did Stephen King versus Edgar Allan Poe, and I was the only person in the room to defend Edgar Allan Poe.
Hello.
And I got destroyed by people who I thought were my friends. I'm looking at you, Scott Roche, who got very mad at me. I'm looking at you, Jordan Coe. So,
by the way, I love how he forgets that I am the huge Poe girl.
Right.
And Scott Roche sat directly in front of me because he wanted to argue Stephen King.
Right. But there have been a lot of Stephen King movies that I have really enjoyed. Yeah. Misery, Green Mile, and probably a whole bunch more that I'm forgetting. Because he writes, a book every 8 minutes and they turn into movies about every nine.
He's good. He's crazy for sure. Well, and that's part of my list, is a long Stephen King list.
So I wanted to ask
The Stand.
Right. I wanted to ask the question. Did they make a movie of The Stand?
It's a four-part movie miniseries that was done on TV.
Was it good?
It's awesome.
Yes. With Rob Lowe in it.
Yes.
And Gary Sinise.
And Jay, I know.
Batman.
All right, so Tech.
So my question is to you guys, because I'm very curious. What about the new adaptations, like Dark Tower and It? Are they good?
Dark Tower is so disappointing.
Really?
I've heard both sides on that one.
I will say this. It is better, and it's better for one reason and one reason only. No prepubescent children orgies. That's a thing that happened in that book. I don't know what coke or acid Stephen King was on.
Yeah, there was traumatizing things for me in that book when I read that in eighth grade.
But other than that, you know, you take that out of that book, it's a great book. You took it out of the movie, and a wonderful performance from the guy from Hemlock Grove, who I can't stand in Hemlock Grove, and it's a darn good movie. Dark Tower, I had to separate myself from that movie because I love that book series. Those seven books are some of my favorite by Stephen King. I read, matter of fact, I started that series during my first deployment in Iraq, and I had to take that book as another turn of the wheel. And for people who have read that series, understand what I mean by that.
So, by the way, I'm gonna decode this. Jason had to decide that he wasn't gonna hate on this movie because his boyfriend was in it.
Right. It was gorgeous. And by the way, I just want to let y'all know, Matthew McConaughey's character was thirsty as hell for the gunslinger in that movie. Like, if you look movie a little closer, it's basically a guy really trying to get the attention of another guy.
It's Idris Elba. How could you not?
Really trying.
Yeah. The movie was very disappointing for me.
So I've heard, I haven't seen it yet, and I've heard some people are very disappointed in it and some people loved it. And so I'm going to have to give that a go. But my question is, what, because generally the book is better for Stephen King. What is it, which Stephen King story is the movie better? And I have one.
I mean, I feel that's a simple question. The movie, Green Mile and Shawshank. Simple.
Yeah, like, Shawshank.
I mean,
yeah. Shawshank is one of those pinnacles of movie making.
I haven't actually read that book, so I can't compare them.
It's
a short story.
Jay?
I like the adaptation of Running Man.
It's a good adaptation, actually.
You know, like, I like that movie. I really like the movie. And
it's a good, bad movie.
Yeah, exactly. And the book is a very difficult story because the book is broken up into the minutes or the hours that this guy has got to live. The only thing I wish they had in the movie that they had in the book was him getting gutted at the back of an airplane that was aiming towards the city. And as he's walking down the aisle of the airplane, his intestines slip out and hook onto the armrest of one of the chairs. And he proceeds to gut himself as he goes down to the end of the plane to try and crash it. That's the only part I wish that they had
that's,
in the movie.
That's but. Graphic. I'm not sure that meets our rating either. Jeez.
About that Running Man adaptation, you get Jim Brown with a jetpack. How can you not like that?
It's
like,
a lot of fun. But I've got one better that I think really expands on the story, and that's Stand By Me, which is an adaptation of The Body.
Right.
Yes.
Great movie.
I will be the guy that says that both the movie and book of The Shining have their charms.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I feel like the only reason that movie, the Shining, gets a bad rap is because of Stephen King, and it's because Kubrick was calling him.
Who gives The Shining a bad rap?
It's Stephen King.
Okay. Because I'm going to say, like, most people, like, film guys, they wank off to that thing. They love it so much. Like, they can't get enough of it. Oh, my God, Kubrick is God, kind of a thing. And it's one of those things where it's like, oh, it's so much better than what Stephen King wrote. That was garbage. And I was like, what? Are you kidding me?
Does wank off meet your rating?
Maybe? Yes. Wank off meets my rating. 13-year-olds do it.
But no, like, it's because of how Kubrick was calling Stephen King, and like it's documented. He was talking about it. Like, he called him at like 2 and 3 in the morning. And we all know Kubrick is a dictator behind the camera. Like, and Stephen King has basically said that that's what, you know, he didn't like the adaptation. And then that on top of it has made him really hate that movie. And then there was another adaptation that he much prefers.
Yeah.
But as you said, I feel that The Shining is superb. I mean, and you got Scatman Crothers. He's got the shine, Doc. Like, I mean, And you can't go wrong with that. And Jack Nicholson is amazing in the movie. And Shelley Duvall.
Yeah. Shelley Duvall.
Is masterful.
So what are some books, what are some movies that are, in your opinion, better than the books?
Well, speaking of Jeff Bridges, I think we do have to talk about True Grit.
Yeah.
Okay. I haven't read or seen.
Okay, True Grit is a better movie than the original, and the book is better than the original, and it's better than the Coen Brothers movie, although the Coen Brothers movie is damn good.
Yeah, and
right, so the Coen Brothers movie is like a true adaptation. So
okay,
you have
but the question is, what movie is better than the book?
310 to Yuma.
There we go. I haven't seen or read. But I've heard that
310 to Yuma is a better movie than a book, for sure.
It's actiony, right?
It's an action. It's not a very wide story. It takes place in a shootout.
Yeah.
And a guy's trying to get a prisoner to trial.
Yeah.
But it's way better movie.
I just hearing the description of it, I don't think that I'd pick that out to read. So it just sounds like it would be something I'd rather watch.
True.
Tech, do you have any movies that are better than the book?
No, but
that's so serious.
I have one where I loved them both equally for the same reason. So it's not that it's that they're the same, and that's The Life of Pi. So the book by Jan Martel has to be one of my absolute favorite books on the planet. And the movie done by Ang Lee was absolutely amazing because it is this incredible piece of high fantasy about a guy going across the Pacific Ocean on a ship that sinks, and he's stuck in a life raft with a bunch of animals from a zoo, including a 450-pound tiger named Richard Parker. And it's a survival story of how he survived on a life raft with a tiger for months on end before washing up on the west coast of North America. But the... it's a piece of high fantasy, and there's some really fantastical elements that you read the book and you, okay, giant island of seaweed, penguins everywhere, there's a tiger, I mean, I don't get any of this. And then I go to watch the movie, and I, you know, I don't know what I was expecting, but oh my God, did it deliver.
It did. It and really did.
Everything I saw in my mind's eye in that book I saw on screen in that movie, and I love them both. And even the last three pages of that book, to give no spoilers, the last three pages of that book fill me with a sense of completion that I have gotten from very, very, very few other books, where you can actually close the back cover of the book, put it down, and say, I did a thing. I have done this. I have read this book. And I understand more about myself and more about certain high concepts about my own spirituality having read that book. And I could watch that movie, and the last 3 minutes I get the same feeling.
Yeah,
I was able to walk out of that theater and going, I watched a thing. I feel accomplished for having watched that. I thoroughly enjoyed the movie, and I really enjoyed that book.
And the movie, and what Ang Lee did with this movie, is it is the only movie I can sit here and say it used 3D to the storytelling advantage. It was part of the story. Normally, when I go, I don't see 3D normally. So when I go see 3D movies, it just looks weird and funny to me anyway. And everything is kind of cheap, like SCTV, somebody trying to feed me pancakes. And it's cheap and it doesn't work and it takes me out of the movie. This movie used 3D to its advantage, and it used it as a storytelling device. And it's the only movie that you will hear me say, but you have to see the 3D version because that's amazing.
I expect at this point in the conversation for like Jason and Hugh to just go men on film and go, hated it.
So?
Okay. So, I haven't seen it. Sorry.
Have you read the book?
I have not also read the book.
I've not read the book. And as I will say that Life of Pi as a movie, I did feel looked spectacular, but I have issues with Ang Lee.
Okay, we're not talking about Ang Lee, though. We're talking about Life of Pi. Separate it from Ang Lee.
Very true. And I feel like he has some directorial flourishes that I don't agree with, but I feel like he was better suited for this movie than he was something else.
Agreed, actually. Yeah, the Ang Lee's talents worked really well for this because he's more wanting to make art than film. And so when he does an action movie like Incredible Hulk, it just doesn't work.
Radioactive poodles.
So, Jason,
I'm gonna derail this and attract a bunch of haters. I'm gonna get a lot of comments for that, but Howl's Moving Castle, better movie than a film, or better movie than a book.
That's on my list. That's on my list.
I haven't read the book, but it's on my shelf.
Yeah, it's on her shelf. I've skimmed it, and so far, and I know a lot of the differences, and the differences that they made make sense to me.
But this was something that when we did the episode where we reviewed the movie, it was brought up a lot from the reviews that you were reading, Nutty, and from the commentary we were getting, that the book wasn't that good.
Yeah. That even the author said she liked the movie better than the book.
On that note, Jurassic Park.
Oh, yeah.
That is a far better movie than a book.
What?
Yes.
What?
Yes.
Oh, that's tough.
So, no way.
I gotta be with tech on this one, man. I don't know.
I'm sorry.
Gas masks and shotguns going into the caves to hunt the raptor nests to get rid of all of them. And we're just going to completely avoid that to do a very, like, a 3 mile an hour chase scene with a badly painted Jeep and a in an animatronic T-Rex? No, no, no.
I have two words for you. Jeff Goldblum.
No, the only decent part
of
that
movie... No, that's an argument against the movie.
Oh, yeah. The only decent part of that movie was casting Newman as Dennis Nedry, which made me hate him even more.
My thing is with the book is...
By the way, I assume we're all talking the 1980s, 90s, whenever it was, Jurassic Park.
Yeah, the original Jurassic Park.
Not the Chris Pratt one.
No, the Chris Pratt's a sequel, right?
We don't want to talk about
Jurassic
World.
I haven't seen it.
And it's discrimination against autistic children. But anyway.
Oh, goody.
No, man, I've read Jurassic Park, and I know they've made changes, but I just... Crichton's stuff is so thick and it's so dense, but not in that good way. And he has some great set pieces in there that I wish were in the movie, but Spielberg created such a wonderful atmosphere of awe and excitement. To be fair, it was like he was a conductor of a wonderfully done orchestra with that movie. And that movie was super, super well done. And I just don't see that same deftness with Crichton. And that's why I gotta say Jurassic Park was so much better.
Oh, boy. So, Jay, do you got a movie better than the book?
Well, only simply because the book is really, really bad. But Maze Runner.
All right.
I've not read it. Better than the book.
Ooh, can I make some of your people angry?
Mm-hmm.
Even though I hate both of these, The Hunger Games, those movies are better than all of those books. All of them.
They seem about the same to me. It's a good adaptation, I think.
I, having to go through and critically analyze that first book when I was in college brought so much more into perspective, and then I watched the movies again, and those books are bad.
So I've got one that I think it might have to do with my age, and some classic literature people might really hate me, but I think that The Jungle Book, the cartoon, is much more enjoyable than reading.
What? No way!
I'm sorry, man. It Baloo the bear. That's my dude.
Now, I have to agree with that, but I have to disagree with Jason's Hunger Games. I honestly thought the books were better. It might have been the actor's chemistry. It might have been some, but I actually did enjoy the books.
I understood Katniss more in the books than I did the movies.
Yeah, I think... I honestly think that's what it was the actor's chemistry. I hated the third book. I hated the third movie.
Yeah,
I didn't like the movies, though, compared to the books. I honestly liked the books better.
I will say that one of the big hurdles when you're making a movie out of something, out of a book that so much of the story goes on inside the main character's head, that it's all about their perspective, you can't really show that in a movie. You know, you can't show the inner turmoil and struggle of, can I trust this person? I have to behave this way outwardly so people think this one thing, but inside I'm thinking this other thing. So showing that is really difficult. So, yeah, I'm going to say the book's much better.
But I would have to also agree with you, Nutty, when it comes to The Jungle Book. Like, I'm sorry, man. Like, Disney hit it out of the park with that thing.
I think the problem, though, is The Jungle Book, the original by Rudyard Kipling, is more of a collection of short stories put in order. And the Jungle Book movie sort of just skips out all of the... Oh, misses so many good stories. But I guess that they're all like jungle stories, right?
Yep.
Each chapter can be listened to as an individual story. You just have to kind of know who the characters are.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think it's more cohesive. And again, it's one of these things that, again, I think it could be age. The fact that we grew up with that movie before ever reading the stories, and it's much more accessible. It's a better narrative.
How do you feel about Peter Pan?
No, I'm not too precious about it. I'm not crazy.
You can all
about...
agree Hook sucked.
Watch your mouth, bad mouthing Robin Williams.
Oh, see, and here I thought you were going to defend your friend that you had on your podcast.
That's right. The perpetual 13-year-old will be played by the 45-year-old comic Robin Williams. I'm sure that's fine. That'll work.
Yeah, the cartoon of Alice in Wonderland was much, I don't want to say it was better because the story was really enjoyable, but it was definitely much lighter.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I liked it a lot more than Through the Looking Glass.
There was a mini series on like ABC or NBC or Wonderful World of Disney back when I was a kid with like Carol Channing as the White Queen and Sammy Davis Jr. as the Cheshire Cat, and it was a live action. That was a little closer to the books, but it was still accessible to my young mind. I loved it.
So we're at movie better than the book?
Yeah.
Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, the original.
All right.
Absolutely.
I like the Roald Dahl book, but the original 70s movie is an instant classic. It is absolutely amazing.
By the way, the fact that Tech is saying that there is an adaptation better than a Roald Dahl book is a pretty huge feat.
I was a huge Roald Dahl fan growing up.
I would like to say that most of the reason why that is because I know this is probably going to sound very stereotypical of me, but Gene Wilder, man, you can't beat that dude. That dude is great. All-time great.
What stereotype is that?
That Gene Wilder can basically do no wrong in a movie. You put him in it, it makes your movie instantly better.
I didn't know that this was a stereotype. Okay.
Unless he's with Richard Pryor, then your movie's instant gold.
Outside.
Yeah.
I thought the Outsiders movie was better than the book with Pony Boy.
I agree. I need to watch that again. I need to introduce Tech to that movie.
I loved the book, and I was really excited when I found out it was a movie. And I think I've watched that movie at least 15 times.
Yeah.
But I thought they were very much on par, but that the movie was just one step ahead.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna go controversial.
Mm-hmm.
Blade Runner?
That's on my list.
Okay, now here's the question. Which cut?
The real one.
With narration, without narration, the director's cut.
We watched the director's cut.
The director's cut that came out a couple of years ago that had the extra footage that puts the controversy to bed.
Yeah. Our eyes, at least.
But one of my favorite parts about the movie is that it has been absolutely confirmed by Ridley Scott that all of his movies take place in the same universe.
Yeah.
So that Blade Runner and Alien are the same world.
So just, everyone.
I know, I love it.
Everyone understands that Blade Runner is inspired by adaptation of Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep?
Oh, wait, you guys seen 2049 yet?
Yeah. We loved it.
It was really good.
It was an art piece.
There were some people in the theater did not understand that they were going to see a Ridley Scott movie.
Yeah, they were really confused.
Did not know what that entailed.
they were like...
So they watched the whole thing, and as the credits go, I hear the guy ahead of me going, "What the heck was that?" He didn't use the word heck.
He didn't say heck.
No.
You could have said, "Hey, if you want to understand it, go watch Prometheus."
Yeah. It was like... They went in expecting an action, and I'm sitting here going, have you just never seen Blade Runner, and you just saw a bunch of, like, inspired by Blade Runner and spoofs of Blade Runner?
It's Harrison Ford with a really cool gun shooting people. This is an action comedy flick. Right? I want to go watch this.
I got some that I looked up now. I have not read these, but I love the movies so much that I'm going to just go with it.
Mm.
Did you know that Dr. Strangelove is based on a story?
No.
Called Red Alert?
No.
I can't imagine that it's better than the movie, because Dr. Strangelove is like one of my top movies.
Strangelove, that's a weird name. Is that a Kraut name? No, he changed it when he moved to the United States. His name used to be Mervertigleben, which, by the way, Mervertigleben is German for strangelove.
Yes.
Just thought I'd throw that out there. I love that gag.
That movie is perfect. It is funny. It is dramatic. It's telling a story. It's political. It has everything. It has amazing acting. There's so many things in it that we use today.
Lightning round this.
All right. So then the next one is Psycho. And that also is like...
That was a book?
Yeah. Yeah, it was a book. So
Wow.
Yeah, and they actually use pieces of the book in the series. Yes, not Yes, Mother. That's the podcast about it. Bates Motel. If you want to listen to a podcast for Bates Motel, listen to Yes, Mother. But yeah, that and more lightning round, because I haven't read these, but I've read synopses. And The Princess Bride is much better than the book. And Forrest Gump is insanely better than the book, because he doesn't rape Jenny in the movie. And he doesn't go to the moon and then land on a in a jungle.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Wow. Didn't know that was, wow, okay, all right.
Yeah, yeah. Forrest Gump, not so good as a book.
I know this is probably very current events, but Black Panther. I think that the comics are a bit inaccessible to people that are not African American, and I think the movie does a wonderful job of making it so that everyone can enjoy this character. Because here's the deal. When you people brought up them making a Black Panther movie, only super hardcore comic nerds and black people were like, yeah, because no one was reading Black Panther.
Well, like, to talk about the influence of this, the Black Panther Party named themselves after this comic book.
Yeah.
And it just make this movie has made it so, like, people are going to go seek out these comics now because of this movie, whereas you wouldn't get that necessarily from something like a Batman or a Superman.
Similar and less important, but similar reaction with Guardians of the Galaxy. Yes. Before Guardians came out, I went to all of my comic book friends and I said, "Have you read it? Do you know it?" And most of them were like, "No, I've never read Guardians." So yeah.
Speaking of Marvel, Captain America Civil War is way better than the Civil War comic.
Agreed.
Although I will counter that with the Planet Hulk comic is better than Thor Ragnarok.
Well, Thor Ragnarok is doing something else. Yeah. But
doesn't the Civil War end with the death of Cap in the comics?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. He
gets execution style in the back of the dome.
But Chris Evans is way too pretty to kill. I'm sorry, what'd you say?
He gets better because it was time travel bullets that put the Red Skull in his brain.
Okay.
Yeah, so again, movie
the
better.
Red Skull got, like, came out of his brain, but he was also huge.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Fun things in that arc of comics.
So lightning round of books that are better than the movie, or that the movie was trash.
Wow, one that nobody else knows. A book called Flowers for Algernon, movie called Charlie. Does anybody else know that?
I know that, and I have read and watched both.
And Jay's
Canadian too, so he probably read that in
Canadian
school also.
Canadian too, bro.
So y'all read that in school?
We all read that in school, and then we sat down and we watched the video, and it was awesome, man.
Okay, so which one did you like better, book or movie?
I found because it was school and because it was a book, I found the book hard the first time. I've read it since I've become an adult and I've enjoyed it more. Mm-hmm. But I initially liked the movie better.
See, I went the other way with it because
So
the story is of a developmentally disabled adult named Charlie, and the book is written like his diary entries. So at first the book is very, very hard to read because he can't write. The spelling is awful, the grammar is bad, and it's very hard to get into. And then he undergoes a treatment to help him overcome his mental difficulties. And as the book progresses, his diary entries become more and more legible. But he becomes super, super, super smart. And about halfway through the book becomes unreadable again because it's now beyond you. It's now like doctorate level white papers. And it's using like a weird grammar style, and it's using big, long, like college words that have more than two syllables in it, so my dumb army brain can't understand them. And then, spoiler alert, the book was written in the 70s. I think I'm fine. Spoiler alert, the treatment doesn't work and starts to reverse itself. So the book finishes with a downward spiral back down the other side.
Yeah.
The movie, the problem I had with the movie is that the book is timeless. The book doesn't give a date or an era or a look or an anything. The book is just a story, a beautiful story of people going through things. The movie is 1972. with bell-bottom pants and bad music and
don't forget the mustaches.
The mustaches and the haircuts and the butterfly collars, and the movie is pure 72.
So
you don't like Waters everywhere?
What'd you say?
I said you don't like people with John Waters mustaches or those cop mustaches?
Burt Reynolds?
Yeah.
So the thing is that the book is timeless, and that I could take the book and give it to people to read today and you'll get something out of the book. You try to watch that movie today, and unless you're a real big fan of 1972,
it's not
going to do the same thing.
So
I guess I was sorry.
Go ahead. Go.
I was more of coming from the opinion as a school child trying to read the book and having to read the book because it's a requirement.
Sure.
And then, oh, hey, we get to watch this movie, and oh, it makes sense now. I really like this kid.
So much like the way that that book is written makes it better in your eyes, for me, A Clockwork Orange is that way because it is written in this futuristic language of Droog, and everything is there's no primer. No, like, this is how people talk here. It's you just have to get into it. And if you can make it past what, page 19, you suddenly 30. Understand it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, my English teacher told me that if you can read the first 30 pages of A Clockwork Orange, you'll finish the book because it's not written in English.
Yeah.
It's that the author combined French, English, German, and Russian to make what he thought the slang of 80 years in the future would be for teenagers. And the book is written as the diary of the kid in the future.
Yeah. And many film fans will say that the movie is better because, again, Kubrick, everybody, you know, they need lotion when they watch his movies. And you know, Malcolm McDowell does a fantastic job and everything. But I think because of the way that it's written, and it's a really thin book, by the way.
89 pages.
Yeah, 89 pages. Because of the way that it's written, it is so much more interesting that it's more than just reading a book. It's not just a story. It's an experience. So I'm on the side of Clockwork Orange being a better book.
Well, the movie doesn't even have the last chapter in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Is the main difference between those two.
Now, what were you going to say here?
And a similar experience to the book you had to read, I think Nani will agree with me here, that there is the American equivalent, and that is The Great Gatsby.
That was on my list.
I like that movie.
That was a Deco movie, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Okay.
I really like that movie.
Now, which one? The original adaptation of it?
DiCaprio.
I think...
So, Hugh, talk us through it.
Yeah, Hugh, go ahead. I don't want to speak over you.
I will admit that I haven't seen the new version, so I don't...
You're talking about the old.
I'm talking about the original with the dude from Law and Order in it.
Ah, yes, it's a Jerry Orbach.
Yeah, and I will admit that that's a movie. That's a book that I read it in high school, and I'm sort of like, yeah, I get it. They're all terrible people, and God is watching them, and I don't care. And then I went back and like I read it as an adult who had like tried to do things and failed, and had come back and tried to do other things in his life, and I was like, oh my God, this makes sense now.
Yeah. I love the book The Great Gatsby. I loved it when I was a kid, you know, and reading it in high school, and I love it as an adult. And because of that whole idea of what it's like to try to do things and fail. It was also built into like our history segment for us because it takes place on Long Island. And so there's local history there. And so that was a big deal. But I love everything about that book, and I love the way that it's written. And even the new version of the movie with Deco, done by Baz Luhrmann, whom I love. Okay, it was fun, but no, the book. The book.
Yeah, I
don't care about the characters in the movie.
I'll say that there is a book and a movie from it, and both have their points. But I think because of the performances in the movie, that it's just a bit better. Because I think it makes it a little more accessible for people. And that's To Kill a Mockingbird. Even though To Kill a Mockingbird is a great book, it's a wonderful book. it just, I think having been able to read that book as well as see the movie, the movie makes it a little more accessible for people. Cause I've asked kids and younger people in my family if they've read the book and they're like, no, I tried it. I couldn't do it, but I saw the movie.
Yeah. But how much of the movie's greatness is based on Gregory Peck? Because the guy's amazing.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. It's Gregory Peck. It's just, he's shouldering that whole thing.
Oh,
yeah.
Yes.
It's a really good adaptation. I'm definitely going to say it. And I mean, when
I like both versions,
when John Grisham tried to do the same thing, and we got a great Sam Jackson movie adaptation. No, am I the only one that noticed that?
So I have a.
Oh, sorry, you just reminded me. Silence of the Lambs. All of those movies and television shows are better than anything Thomas Harris wrote. Anything, that guy sucks.
I liked the book Silence of the Lambs. And I read it second. Yeah, they're two different things to me. I mean, because the movie is fantastic, and Anthony Hopkins is just amazing.
Yeah, that's the thing.
And
Anthony Hopkins' performance.
Your girlfriend, what's her name? I can't think of it.
Jodie Foster.
Jodie Foster is wow, and without her, we wouldn't have Dana Scully.
If anyone is wondering as to why Nutty calls her my girlfriend, because I seem to have a type. I love women that would have absolutely no interest in me. So Jodie Foster goes to the top of the
light
list.
Light blue eyes, dark hair, lesbian. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Just his type.
Ding, done, gone.
Oh, man. No, here's the deal. Is it Anthony Hopkins' performance? Because here's the deal. He makes that movie. And it's the chemistry between him and Jodie Foster that is what I think that whole thing hinges on.
Oh, yeah.
I find his books a trial to get through.
I'll give you another example. Same thing. Catch 22. It's a great movie with Alan Arkin in it. It's a wonderful story. It's a comedy. It's hilarious about a bunch of guys in North Africa in World War II. And Catch 22 has become a phrase in our society for, you know, a situation that you can't win, that you're stuck in. The book by Joseph Heller. Oh, wow. How do I describe his writing style? Take a giant plate of spaghetti and throw it at the wall and see what sticks. And that's kind of what his writing feels like to me. It is beyond insane. The guy is disjointed. It's like, I have ADHD. I have a house full of half-completed hobbies and projects because I can't concentrate on anything for more than 3 seconds. And Joseph Heller's writing doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah. So before we wrap up, just a few things I'm going to throw out there. Much like Practical Magic, Girl Interrupted, the book and movie are nothing alike. They're two completely different stories. They just happen to involve a mental institution. Go read Girl Interrupted and you will realize how trash that movie is. Other ones to throw out there real quick?
Did you guys talk about Lord of the Rings and Hobbit?
No.
Game of Thrones?
Game of Thrones is much better to be read, in my opinion, as somebody who podcasts about Game of Thrones.
I've only ever read it. So,
Lord of the Rings, I tried to read, and when it was the Ring of Mildemil to the Mountain of Faldoral to Maldamal to the Swamp of Gindibindibindibin, I just, okay, you're a linguist, I get it, you're smart, but wow, could you write a book, please? A dictionary?
I was going to bring them both up because I feel like the Lord of the Rings movies are better than the book, but I feel like the Hobbit book is way better than the Hobbit movies.
Agreed. Yeah. I haven't seen the second one yet because
there
of
is
that.
That Hobbit trilogy is so self-indulgent.
Oh, it's so bad.
Why do you take one book and make a trilogy and then you take trilogies and make one movie? Like, I don't get this.
Because Peter Jackson wants to make it so when you watch his movies, that's a day of your life gone.
I didn't lose a day watching The Frighteners. Let's go back to that. All right.
I never saw episode 3 of Lord of the Rings. I went to episode 2 in the theaters and I fell asleep. And when I woke back up, nothing had changed. Except they were getting ready for a big battle. I fell asleep. I woke up. They were still getting ready for a big battle. And then Legolas surfed down a flight of stairs on his shield while shooting a bow at orcs in perhaps the stupidest scene ever put into a movie.
Thank goodness we have dynamic mics.
Oh my god!
Okay, the problem with Return of the King is the Return of the King ends, the book ends 6 times, and the movie ends 5 times.
Now, I will say this. This is a show I think anybody who's been watching anime loves. One Punch Man.
One Punch!
Better series than a comic because...
they play with anime.
That and one... he openly admits he's not an artist. he has on record saying, yeah, I don't draw very well. And so when they adapted it into anime, they cleaned up his artwork and made the story a bit more concise because the manga is like, here's what Saitama's doing. Now you've got 40 chapters of what these side characters are doing, like making breakfast.
Well, because it was a webcomic.
Yeah.
And it was like one of those early 90s, like... well, manga webcomics that just kind of goes forever.
Yeah, but I love that. I love that in the animated series as to what they do is when the art style changes. You know, when it's Saitama in his own head and he's plainly drawn with like dots for eyes, and then all of a sudden he's getting ready to fight somebody, and it turns into, you know, very serious lines and shading, and definitely a different artist drew that scene, and then he like hits the guy, and then he goes back to just, you know, Saitama with dots for eyes and a bag of groceries. I love that show.
So any other ones to throw out there?
I have 3 left on my list.
Go ahead.
Battle Royale, Dune,
yep,
and Water for Elephants.
Dune. Oh, God, Dune.
Oh, what about...
okay, so where do you stand on each of these things?
I think the book and the movie for Battle Royale are good, but you have to like that kind of book or movie to enjoy that.
Okay.
Dune, the book, obviously. The movie was a good... it wasn't even a good attempt, but...
but it's Patrick Stewart.
You gotta watch it. Oh, I know, but he can't save it.
It's like all the individually cool things from the book thrown together, and they add up to a movie, and they're 4 hours.
By the way, that's the line of the episode. I mean, that just sums it up right there.
But
I know
Patrick Stewart. Yeah, he can't save it.
Right, and Water for Elephants.
I found the movie very... I watched it with my wife after listening to the audiobook with my wife on a trip. I think it's equally as good of a movie as a book.
Really? Okay. I was surprised. I watched the movie. I haven't read the book. I was surprised that I kind of enjoyed it.
Hey, what about... I was sitting here talking to Hugh, but what is it? Battleship Earth starring John Travolta?
I'm going to say the movie is better than the book because there's a lot less Scientology in it.
Oh, another one of those is good.
It's a catch-22.
No, movie is better. There's less Scientology.
Oh, there's...
I will have to say that the movie of Clue is way better than the instruction booklet.
I agree with this 100%.
Okay, so I have a closer.
Yes.
Passion of the Christ?
Oh, no.
Is that better than the Bible?
No.
Yeah, I'm not getting involved in this debate. I threw that out there.
So my last one here is Suicide Squad. That book and the animated series is much better than the movie.
Yeah, that original run of that is so good.
No matter how hot Margot Robbie is, and no matter how hot Will Smith is, and how great he looks in that coat and hat,
it had some good stuff about it. But no, the book and
they did an Arkham animated movie of the Suicide Squad.
Yeah, yeah.
That had some problems,
but it was better than the movie.
Yes,
it
was better than that movie.
Yes.
There is a scene in that movie where you see Will Smith and the army guy who is like a cardboard cutout, and and you can see Will Smith like reaching out and connecting with that actor and begging him with his eyes to at least give him something to work with.
Act with me here, buddy. Act.
Again, Margot Robbie and Will Smith cannot save that movie. I don't care how cool you are, Fresh Prince. You can't do it. Oh, iRobot. We didn't talk about iRobot.
Oh.
Based off Isaac Asimov.
Okay, so I have seen Last Man on Earth, Omega Man, and iRobot, and they're all based on the same short story.
No, iRobot's based on a different story. You're thinking
thinking of Legend. My bad. Go ahead, iRobot.
There are a lot of movies where Will Smith is racist against fictional things.
To be fair, that is an inversion from the Vincent Price version where they have jive-talking vampires, which is awesome.
That is kind of... like, that is kind of one of the better movies we watched on Chrononaut Cinema Reviews, though.
All right, so iRobot.
Oh, my goodness. My.
Speaking of things that don't actually relate to the book they're
exactly,
based on.
That's my thought. It has nothing to do with it.
Oh, he's got some nice sneakers, doesn't he? Those Chucks, vintage, right? Oh, God. Shia LaBeouf is comic relief. Okay, I'm going to go ahead.
Okay, look, we all know it is Nutty Bites canon that Shia LaBeouf ruins everything. All right. So,
Indiana Jones.
Let's talk I Am Legend, Omega Man, Last Man on Earth. I think that that is actually really interesting to watch all of the different adaptations. I'm actually not a big fan of Omega Man, but Last Man on Earth is a lot of fun to watch. It's Vincent Price. You can watch it on archive.org. Go have fun with that. But it has nothing to do with
it. Vampires.
Yeah.
It's an experience.
The original book is very dated.
Yes.
It's not explicitly racist, but there's a couple of vaguely very uncomfortable.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Which is what you get when you read classic sci-fi, by the way.
Yeah, but it is like a good book that does not hold.
So Steve Pritchard in the chat says...
Hi, Steve.
Omega Man kept up with the jab, talk, and vamp.
So I have one last question to ask around the table.
Yes.
Is there a book that you know that you want to see as a movie, or a movie that you want to read as a book?
I'm going to go in between and say I don't want to see an adaptation of the book of about my great uncle's Truvon as a
which
movie.
They have plans.
They do have plans, and I don't want it. I don't.
You don't want to see Deco kidnap your uncle?
No.
But he played such a good racist southerner in Django Unchained.
He did. But it's just, I think that's the type of story that you need to read. Like, I don't think you can get it well on the screen, especially the way it's written.
Mm. It's given the sensitivity of the topic and the fact that your uncles were abused. And
it's written from the standpoint of a woman trying to find out what's going on. And she's writing this book based off the experiences and stories told by the people who live them.
Can you give us the 10-second summary for people that are just tuning into this podcast as to who your uncles were?
My great uncles were two albino African Americans. They were Georgie and Willie Muse, and they were kidnapped as children from a small town known as Truvine into the circus by a large, menacing white guy named people locally called the Bad Man. And basically, because of that, they had a very hard younger part of their life, but it was an experience because they did perform for the Queen of England. They did go to Hawaii and Japan and the South Pacific and all kinds of other places throughout the world in the Middle East. And all those experiences cannot be taken away, but it also has to have an asterisk by it, kind of like Barry Bonds' Hall of Fame, because they were kidnapped and their mother had to literally fight through Jim Crow South and sue to get her own two children back.
Yeah. Wow. So, Jay.
Follow that.
Well, every book that I've ever wanted to see as a movie that's been made a movie has been almost a disappointment, so I'm afraid to mention any at all. But I would like to see. There's always this talk about redoing Dune. I'd like to see that.
Yeah, me too.
Joe Abercrombie has a particular group of characters that really do it for me. It's the Bloody Nine, and the whole series is just awesome. A lot of sword fighting and wars, but I don't know if they can make it a movie, so I'm hesitant to suggest that too. The first book in the series is called Red Country, and they're awesome. But yeah, I don't think they. I don't know if they can. I want to see it, but I don't know if they can.
I have a couple.
Yep.
Scott Sigler's Galactic Football League would work really good as an animated series, as long as Scott Sigler doesn't do any of the voices because he's an awful voice actor.
Oh, come on!
Oh,
no, I'm sorry. Him doing the girl voices just completely throws me out of it.
He's awesome.
No.
By the way, you have to understand. So Tech read these dead tree. So he has this whole idea of like, oh my god, they're
I know what Becca sounds like in my head. I know what the Scorno sound like in my head when I heard the audio for the first time, and I heard Scott doing a girl voice going, "Let's go get him, guys." No, Scott, go away.
Well, and the fact that you have like this whole like headcanon about the Denver, crushing on Quentin. Yeah, there's
There's a Denver Quentin slash thing that going on in my head that needs to be in the movie.
Isn't that a Scorno?
H.G. Geiger shit right there.
Wouldn't you do me the honor of receiving a view passes? She's not talking about football, guys. About football.
And everyone who listened to Scott do the voices, that would never occur to you.
Not even a little bit.
Exactly.
But the other one, on a serious note, the other one, and by the way, I love you, Scott. the other one that I think it may have been a movie. I don't care. I don't want to watch it. I want to see a good one. Slaughterhouse-5 by Kurt Vonnegut.
Yeah.
If you ever want to know what PTSD does to a soldier, as a soldier with an OSI, occupational stress injury, bordering on PTSD, if you want to know what PTSD does to a person, watch Slaughterhouse-5 or read Slaughterhouse-5. It is the most amazing, beautiful soldier story I have ever read. And I want to see a really, really good movie done by somebody who loves the book as much as I do, who can translate that love onto the screen and do justice to the story. Kurt, you know, rest in peace. Love you, bro. I want to see this.
And it's got to be in black and white. I don't know why, but in my head, it's always in black and white.
No, certain scenes of it. Yeah. No, here's what you do.
Real life is black and white.
No.
No?
Scenes in the past in World War II are black and white. Okay. Scenes in the present are in color. Scenes in the future when he's on the alien ship are in 3D.
Ah, that would be fun.
The book I wanted to talk about was Amberlow by Laura Elena Donnelly.
Okay.
I just finished. It's up for a Nebula this year. And it is a alternate world kind of 20s and 30s, like cabaret spy novel sort of thing. And it is amazing. And it would be amazing if they could bring that to like a movie. But Hollywood wouldn't have the balls because it is hella gay.
I have a not so hella gay, but a gay suggestion as well. Mine is I want to see The Dark Wife as a movie because I want to see all that.
The Dark Wife.
Well, Q, why don't you tell us about The Dark Wife?
Well, The Dark Wife by Sarah E. Deamer, aka Bridget Essex, is a YA lesbian retelling of the myth that's mostly known as the Rape of Persephone, which recasts it as with Persephone and Hades as the heroes, and the flip is that Hades is a woman.
Okay, Nutty's been telling me about this because some of my two favorite songs on earth are about this topic. So yes, please tell me more.
Okay, I produced the audio for it. It is read by Veronica Jaeger.
And I hate her and everything she does.
her Hades voice. Mm. Oh boy,
it's a good voice. It's a good voice. Yeah, it's hot.
Veronica Jaeger can't do a sexy voice, can she?
I had to take a long time to process this audiobook because it made me ask myself some questions.
Wow. All right, that is the
that is high praise right
there.
Yeah,
that needs to go like on Veronica's LinkedIn or something as, you know, an endorsement.
Good will make you question your sexual identity.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you everyone for joining us. Thank you for people for joining us in the chat. And now I'm going to ask everybody, where can people find you on the internet? Hugh.
Well, you can find all my projects, writings, podcasts, and other things at HughJOdonnell.com, and you can catch me and Jason's podcast. It's supposed to be weekly. It's more like monthly at NostalgiaPilots.com, which we are watching Gundam Wing episode by episode, and it is amazing.
Indeed.
And monthly, you're doing Chrononaut Cinema Review, right?
That's coming out a bit more frequently, sort of whenever Skinner. I do that with Skinner Cones whenever they put it up because they edit that.
And that's also on your main feed.
Yes, and that is in my feed as well. So you can get a feed of all of my podcasts at hughjodonnell.com.
All right. And Jason.
So I'm Jason.
I'm Jen.
And you can always find all of our work at talknerdtomepodcast.com. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/nerdytome. And of course, you can find us on Twitter at nerdytomepodcast. And like you said, you can find me laughing about the vaguely / actually homoerotic Gundam show from the 90s, Gundam Wing, on Nostalgia Pilots.
Very intense.
And Jay, where can people find you on the internet?
Well, you can find MPAT on Facebook. We have a Facebook page, MPAT. And you can find Jay Langjans on Facebook. But our current home is on nimlast.org, because that's really the only episodes we've done ourselves that are available. Everything else has sort of faded and disappeared.
And by the way, if you ever want to resurrect any of those old things, we can talk.
Yeah.
Okay.
we love you, man of a thousand voices.
And Tech, anything you want to plug?
You make me go after the voice guy.
Yeah, I do. I don't want to follow that.
So I will now put on my natural accent as a French Canadien, and I will say that you can find everything that I do on nimlast.org. That is nimlas.org. But if you want to look for my stuff, you can find it at Upside Down and Flying Point Sale, or you nice. You may find my stuff at Upside Down and Flying .tumblr.com, where I talk about I do the Aikido and I fall the upside down and I try to learn the lesson about my life while other people try to kill me with stick. When I am in this accent, I have to add the H in the word that not have the H and then take it away in the word that do, because I love the Aki, but I have a problem with the H.
Thank you very much. And you can find the rest
suck
of Nutty
it,
Bites
Jay.
And links to everything else, including, you know, you'll find links to my other podcasts on nimlas.org, nimlas.org, including you just go into the search bar and look up any of the topics that we told you. Yeah, we did an episode on that. Thank you. Bye.
Yeah. Bye.
Hey, do I get an explicit tag if I swear in French?
That's a good question.
I would just like to let you know, when Lulu hears that, she's going to break your leg.
She's going to pee her pants. It's going to be awesome.
You have the great accent.
You have to get two explicit tags. That's how it works.
Like, I don't know.
One explicit tag, and then there's another one underneath.
Yeah, what's explicit en français?
Sadly, it's explicit with an E. Let's say explicit.
It's explicit. And
with an E. Oh man, Lulu's gonna kill it.
That's great.
Bring it.
I'm sitting there thinking, like, oh, she's gonna kill this man.
He didn't even do his mom's accent. That was just generic Frenchman.
Frederic, I have noticed that you have been very sad since your girlfriend has left you, and you have not left your room. I need to ask you, are you on the drugs?
Please tell me this is an actual conversation.
An actual conversation. And she's like innocently scratching at the door frame, trying not to draw attention to the fact that my mom thinks I'm high because my girlfriend dumped me for my best friend. But hey, you know, whatever. No, I'm 17 and I'm an angsty teenager who listens to way too much White Zombie and KMFDM.
And on that note. Oh, by the way, Steve had a couple of, apparently Donahue said lies in something, but in a reaction to something we said, but I don't know what it was because I didn't sign in early enough. But Steve Pritchard said he was late to the party. Tech, you should have gone to Return of the King. Legolas, surf down a war, Oliphant's tusk, epic awesomeness in yet another battle.
Oh, God.
And then he also said, but Travolta managed to maintain the ham from the book. Well, anyway.
That's because he was manhandling the ham in his mouth, along with the curtains, the scenery, the outfits, the costumes.
So before I close up, I just want to do a quick thank you to all of our patrons and the people who have been donating to the Nutty Bites podcast who keep us going and brought us up to doing 2 episodes a month. Thank you very much.
Oh, those guys.
Dave of his podcast will be coming out in June or July.
Yay.
Who is one of our big daddies. And our other big daddy, Jason.
Thanks,
thank you
daddy.
Very much. And in upped pledge from Susanna. Susanna, if you're listening to this, that secret project that you've got that you want to launch soon, if you need me to make a promo for that or something and put it on this podcast, please let me know. Send me a script.
Secret project.
I will gladly scream for you.
And no, you're not going to be screaming. There's going to be no boys in this. Thank you to new patron Andy Luke. And you can check out his writings. Thank you to our QC guy, Aaron Jackson. Thank you to OG donator Shane. Thank you to Beth, the Radical Geek, which is separate from Beth, by the way. Thank you to Steve Pritchard. Thank you to Rich the TT. Thank you to Mike. Thank you to Ken Kennedy. Thank you to Lynette of the Bicast. Thank you to Justine. You can check her out on Patreon. Thank you to Susan and Melissa the Bathtub Mermaid, who is Jason's favorite because she's in a bathtub. Thank you to Kinsey. Thank you to Ian. Thank you to Harold. And thank you to Patrick Scifito. You can also check out his writings. I'd give you the link, but it was down last time. Also, thank you to PayPal donor Dagny and IRL donor sometimes, or no, not sometimes, sorry, often, Nick. Thanks so much, you guys.
I'm Jen, and this is Jason.
And you should be listening to the Talk Nerdy to Me podcast. That was a promo.
Promo? You didn't even tell them they could find us on Facebook.
Where? You mean at facebook.com/nerdytome?
Yes, and what about their website?
TalkNerdyToMePodcast.com?
Yes, but you didn't tell them.
TalkNerdyToMePodcast.com?
Exactly. That would be a promo.
Luckily, I was recording.
Were you? Aww.
Nutty Bites is produced by Nimlas Studios under a Creative Commons Attribution No Commercial Non-Derivatives 3.0 International License. That means you can't change it without my permission. You can share it and send it to your friends. Just link back to me, my site, and everything. We live at nimlas.org, which has links to everything social media, including facebook.com/group/nuttybites and patreon.com/nukejoss, or call 347-NUTTY42.